Welcome, everyone. We might kick off. Thank you for attending the session, How to Improve Capital Management, ICAP, and Capital Performance, presented by Stephanie and Chow. My name's Rashi, and I'll be the chair for today's session. I'll just kick off by doing some introductions for both Chow and Stephanie. Chow is an actuarial consultant at PwC. He advises clients in the FS industry on issues ranging from forecasting, pricing, product, data analysis, insights, valuation, reinsurance, and capital. Chow has performed a number of ICAP-related projects in recent years, mainly for general insurance companies. He's maintained a very keen interest in socially relevant research and discussions, especially longevity insurance. Chow is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries and also a chartered enterprise risk actuary. He's currently on the council, focusing on issues such as education and new practice areas. He's joined by Stephanie. Stephanie also specialises in insurance, credit risk, advanced modelling and wider field implications, predominantly advising clients in the FS industry too. She is a qualified actuary, having started her career in South Africa and spent some time with a French firm before transferring to Australia. Stephanie has been involved in a number of ICAP projects and has worked with a number of clients to review and reinvigorate their capital management practices. Please join me in welcoming Stephanie and Chow.
Thank you, Rashi, for that kind introduction. Today we're here to talk about how to improve capital management and capital performance. Today we'll start by sharing with you our thoughts on why capital management is so important, and then we'll share with you what you guys have told us, how you're doing in your own organisations on capital management through the results of the capital management survey. If you go on the GIS 2016 app, the results, the full results of the survey is up, uploaded last week. And then we'll share with you some learnings from the past, some learnings from other industries and from other jurisdictions. And we'll finish off by presenting our insights. So why is capital management so important? Now, throughout the past 2 days of this conference, we've heard a lot about how there are going to be lots of challenges and lots of disruptions that the industry is going to face going forward. Insurance companies may not even own their traditional insurance functions anymore. So if you think about the themes that we've been talking about, technology, you know, blockchain, you know, do insurance companies actually need traditional functions underwriting insurance anymore? With all that change, what's the purpose of insurance companies? What's the core function going forward? Well, it doesn't matter how you change, we think that capital will remain a core function of insurance companies. And actuaries have a lot of value to add. So we've also heard in this conference about the role of actuaries going forward. And if capital is an important part of insurance companies, well, actuaries will need to adapt to that and become the go-to people. And just reinforcing what I've said, you know, all the things we've talked about over the last 2 days. Lemonade was an example given by someone at the plenary yesterday that you can arrange peer-to-peer insurance and organise your own, you know, home and contents just, you know, in a space of 2 or 3 minutes on an app. But how is that app backed by capital? You know, how do they ensure that policyholders will always get their money when they lodge a claim? Capital management is really important. And here are some graphs on how the industry is going over the past few years. Capital is so important, more important going forward, but it's not being very productive. In fact, it's becoming less productive. And these are some of the numbers we pulled from the APRA stats. This morning, Luke and Dave showed us how to pull numbers out of APRA stats, very useful. You can see that the return on equity trends have been going down. Capital is becoming less productive, and that's not just a result of a low-yield environment. And so both investment margins and underwriting margins have declined. And we've also heard that at various conferences that there's a regulatory focus on capital, on how insurance companies should ensure that they have enough capital to meet stakeholder needs and policyholder needs when the time comes. And the efficient running of insurance companies going forward is going to be driven by capital management. And here is just a result from the survey that you guys have filled out, that the industry is probably not quite there yet. You can see that capital management is not fully embedded across all of the organizations that we've surveyed. And really, we're all over the board, which highlights the importance of this topic and how we collectively, as a profession and industry, should lift our game. So what are the gaps? So we'll talk to you about all of these things in our presentation, but in summary, we think that, one, embedding capital management. Capital management needs to be embedded in decision-making, in strategy, in business planning. There's room to grow. Secondly, capital allocation, or the use of capital allocation, performance metrics, to drive the right incentives and the right behaviour to align this end capital goal across the organisation. And lastly, stress testing. How do we use stress testing as a strategic tool in capital management, rather than just, you know, doing it and ticking a box and say, hey, I'm going to do A, B, C, and D. And so now I'll share with you some of the results we got from the capital management survey. So thank you, everyone, for all those people who've filled out the survey. So in total, we've got 28 respondents. Anonymous, unless you've filled out your names. A few of you chose not to. We've got 4 major general insurers, 3 medium general insurers, and 2 general insurance subsidiaries. And the target audience we sent this survey to were sort of actuaries, you know, capital specialists, chief actuaries, appointed actuaries, modelling actuaries, and so on. And we'll present these in different themes, and we'll go through them quite quickly, because we assume that you've read the full results.
Yeah, and if you haven't, it's available on the internet, on the GIS website. So the first area we looked at was embedding ICAP within the business, and we noted that things like return on equity are generally considered quite important, but other more risk-adjusted measures, such as RAROC, risk-adjusted return on capital, are not widely considered, and there's a lot of room for improvement in that area. ICAP objectives appear to be appropriate, but there's not a good understanding across the business of what these are. ICAP needs to become more of a strategic tool in the future. Currently, there is a balance on compliance and strategic decision-making in terms of using the ICAP, but this isn't fully mature. Yeah, as we can see, most people said ICAP is in the middle of strategic and compliance usage. Next, we looked at the integration between risk and capital. Risk appetite is something which is well understood by the board, and the board's responsible for setting the risk appetite. They also understand the material risks which are faced by the business. However, very importantly, we noted that, as you can actually see in this graph, the impact of business decisions are not widely understood because they're not monitored and reported across the business. The impact specifically on things like risk tolerance and available capital levels. The alignment between risk and capital is seen as something that's important, but again, this is something that isn't mature across the industry. Capital allocation was another area where there was a wide range of responses, and the granularity to which this is performed is very, very different across different organisations. Most will either allocate capital down to a business level or to a business unit level or a product level, but no one that we observed allocated capital down to things like functions within the business or services. As a result, senior management does have a rough understanding of what the capital intensive parts of the business are, but they don't understand all of the capital consumption factors.
Interesting. No one gave a 9 or a 10 on this question on capital consumption factors.
Yeah.
We should say that these are allowed for by organisations. So we try to send it to at least two people per organization, and then we try to average it out. So if you had three or four from your organization fill it out, you're not being overrepresented.
Yep. With regards to monitoring, reporting, and governance of the ICAP, we found that monitoring is regularly performed, at least on a quarterly basis, sometimes on a monthly basis. And the capital triggers which are used, they vary quite a lot, but we consider them to be appropriate. But management actions need to be more comprehensive. They need to be more detailed and appropriate and thoughtful. Stress testing is widely used to validate and test risk appetite. And there are many types of tests which insurers consider, scenarios being refreshed at least once a year, sometimes more often. One of the key areas in which stress testing needs to be improved is, again, the use of management actions, understanding what the most appropriate forms of management actions are, how to quantify the impact of these, as well as things like contagion and tail dependencies.
Yeah, so here, guys, it's all about what you are actually using stress testing for. What's the point? You know, allowing the board to have a meaningful conversation on stresses or scenarios. And if we haven't got management actions clearly understood or contagion dependencies well understood, then it's really just a box-ticking exercise.
Yeah, there tends to be a lot of scenarios which are just generated for the sake of stress testing, but the purpose of doing this exercise is not thought out from the beginning. It's not. You need to think about what are the questions we want to answer when we do stress testing.
And this one's particularly interesting. No one thinks that their tail dependency or contagion risks are clearly understood or captured in stress testing.
Yeah. Then another interesting area, probably most people know this already, but economic capital models are not widely used in the sense that we see in Europe within Australia. Most organizations have some sort of economic capital model which they use, but these are not mature, and the appreciation for their value is not consistent across the industry. They don't use these for everyday decision-making.
And this is a very important survey question. So if you have an economic capital model, but you don't use it in everyday decision-making, what do you have it for? Just ticking a box, actuaries having a bit of fun. So that's what you've told us. Now we'll take you through some of the learnings from the past, some learnings from other industries and Europe. Now, I guess you guys have been to a million of these presentations on capital management, so we won't go through some of the old themes that we've already heard. So things like, you know, capital is an important tool, economic capital is an important tool, it will enhance performance, et cetera, et cetera. And how the RBC can be a very useful risk management tool, and how it's a good thing for board to get informed and be engaged in ICAP components. And yesterday we heard Gay talk about ICAP best practice. But the overall summary is that it doesn't matter where you go, it doesn't matter how many people do these presentations, the principles of capital management are the same, that you need to have a clear linkage between risk and capital management. You need to use the tools available to you for strategic decision-making, whether it's ICAP, whether it's your own internal framework, whatever it is, use it for strategic decision-making. Stress testing as well, how can you use it to understand the adverse experience? What are you doing it for? You know, to enable yourself to have a good conversation and understand your capital in practical terms. And the board needs to have an active role in capital management. So those are the themes.
We looked a bit at learnings from other industries, so in particular ADIs or banks. ICAP for them is something that's well established. They've been doing it for a long time. They've had the implementation of Basel II back in 2008, which was what brought the key changes on. They were also the first to conduct the APRA industry-wide stress tests in 2014, and that highlighted things like their strong governance structure and their use of stress testing in things like capital planning and forward-looking strategy. But again, like we will see, in life and GI as well. There's a lot of scope for scenario development and improvement in the stochastic modelling approaches used for stress testing. Then with life insurers, similar to GI, LAGIC was implemented just a couple of years ago, so the level of development in terms of capital management is very similar to what we see in GI. One of the key things which we've also touched on is embedding the ICAP in business decision making, that there's still a lot of scope for improvement there and integrating the relationship between risk and capital. They also completed stress tests, as we know, last year, and many insurers received a lot of positive feedback on that. Then with Europe, big one, Solvency II. It's just gone live. So the first quantitative and qualitative disclosures are due next year. One major difference that we see with Europe is the proliferation of internal capital models. And now that they've implemented Solvency II and they're using their internal models, they're focusing on things like capital optimization.
And if you think about how that's changed the industry in Europe, they're now miles ahead of us. You know, the conversations that people have in Europe are like, you know, capital optimization. Here we're still, I think, stuck on the use of capital allocation and how to do it properly.
So obviously with the internal model approvals that are happening, there's a wider appreciation of them as strategic decision-making tools than there appears to be here in Australia. They obviously lead to lower capital requirements if you are a large diversified insurer and you're able to calculate your risk explicitly. But we know that the process for approving these models is very time consuming. It's very costly. Once they've had their models improved, they need to constantly, whenever they make changes, they need to have those approved as well. And they've got increased disclosure requirements around those models.
And it's curious here that the story in Europe is exactly the same as in Australia, that the gains and, you know, the cost and benefits are the same, but somehow in Australia we've only got one insurer being approved to use internal models, whereas in Europe these scores, if you bring up the web page, it doesn't fit on the page.
Yeah. So as part of our survey, we asked what people thought about internal models. And it was interesting to see the perception is that there would not be a lot of benefit derived out of it, and it would take a lot of effort to build and maintain. Yeah, so again, same thing. Economic capitals can be used for a lot of purposes other than regulatory capital calculations. They can be used for explicit risk quantification, for more detailed and sophisticated capital allocation, strategic and business decision making, pricing, reinsurance strategies, investment strategies. So it may be something that's complex and expensive to develop, but we think it's worth putting our minds to.
Yeah, the Europeans definitely think it's worth their while. But the perception here in Australia is somewhat different, especially when it comes to using it for regulatory capital calculations. You know, you can see the survey result looking like a mountain. You know, lots of people have said, oh, the benefit is going to be 6 or below, whereas the effort, lots of people have said it's 9 and 10. Capital allocation, I guess, this is sort of old news in Europe, how to use capital allocation to drive capital performance. So if you think about how companies are doing capital allocations here, allocating down to each product, down to each business. Now, in Europe, there's a hypothesis going on, and it's proven, sort of proven by empirical observations, and that is the market will reward you for risk performance, not just pure capital performance. And the market will reward you for both stability and the quantum of profit. And so you can't just get the market to appreciate your stock if you simply change the business mix and change your risk profile. The market will see that through. And so how do you align all of the activities and all of the incentives in the organization to meet market demands? And that is, you've actually got to have disaggregated measures allocated down to each function so that everyone's working towards the same risk-adjusted capital goal.
Yeah, as I said earlier, there's now been a big focus on things like capital optimization within Europe, and ways in which that is considered is through product and risk diversification, optimizing investment strategies, reinsurance strategies. And this is driven by the need to improve profits and capital efficiency in an environment where there's a low interest rate and we are suffering from the post-GFC impacts. And this leads us to the question of how well Australian insurers actually understand their capital consumption factors and whether they could be thinking about something like capital optimization at this point.
Which brings us to our insights. And so we've heard about, you know, how the Australian industry is doing. We've heard how other industries are doing and how Europe does its thing. So how can we improve on capital management? Well, we've broken up to a few different key points. One is that the tools that you use for capital management, say ICAP is one of them, right? So ICAP needs to be embedded in business decision making, number one. Number two, better integration between risk and capital, or at least you need to monitor and report the impact of business decision making on risk and capital. Thirdly, more appreciation of RAROC and economic capital management. Wider use of capital allocation. So it's not about capital allocation, it's about how you use capital allocation to measure performance, you know, as a metric to align incentives and decisions. And lastly, how do you build your stress testing framework such that it achieves a purpose? And from there on, how do we build different quantitative things in there to meet the needs of stress testing, whether it be tail dependencies, whether it be contagion? And so firstly, embedding capital management. So ICAP is a regulatory tool. You can view it as a regulatory tool, or you can actually view it as something that will drive positive outcomes for your business. It's the same as ORSA in Europe under Solvency II. But it exists for a purpose, and the purpose is capital management. And so that needs to be at the centre of all strategic and business decision-making. Monitor your results, know the impact of business decisions on capital and risk, and embed the risk appetite. Now, secondly, capital allocation. I've talked about this. How we can adapt. If you think about the market going forward, right, with all these disruptions, all these challenges that I've talked about, with the change in environment, capital management is going to be important. Now, Australia is lagging a few years behind Europe, but the market will catch up. And so how do you align everyone's activities within the organisation to the same goal? And that is through the use of capital allocations. How do you make decisions such that you deploy capital resources at the right places, grow your business and invest in the right places that will give you a good outcome, rather than saying, hey, I've got this business, it's not making my, you know, 8% hurdle rate, so I'm going to get rid of it. And unfortunately, in Australia, I think the industry is still sort of not quite there yet.
So economic capital models, we see them as something that are valuable, and time and money should be invested in developing these and trying to glean some use out of them, whether it's for regulatory capital or whether it's for strategic and business decision making, whether it's for pricing, reinsurance strategies, investment strategies. We think it's important that these are more widely used and developed to become more and more mature.
And coming back to the same point, it's not just about having an economic capital model, it's how you use it.
Yeah.
So if you're just having it and if you don't use it, then it's just a toy, you know.
Yeah.
And lastly, stress testing. Also, you know, I think in terms of stress testing, same message. It's not really a toy that people just use, tick the box. Hey, we're going to do your reverse stress test. Hey, we're going to build in a Sydney earthquake with a tsunami that will hit Tasmania and that sort of thing.
You know,
it exists for a purpose.
So before you even start determining stress tests, you need to think about what are the questions you want to answer, what are the problems you want to solve, and how can you test for those? How can you use the results of the tests? You need to involve the board and senior management in determining the scenarios that are to be tested, because often we see that they're passive recipients of what the scenarios are. They sign off on them, but they don't have a real say in expressing what they feel are the risks to the business that need to be examined.
Yeah, or the other extreme. Some boards have huge two-day workshops that they will develop scenarios that are one in 800-year events, which are they're really fun to work with, but they don't actually do anything.
Not plausible.
And so just in case you come back after 2 years and you look at our presentation, what are the key messages? So here are the key messages. Again, embedding the ICAP, better integration between risk and capital, appreciation of RAROC and ECM, use of capital allocations, and use of stress testing. With that in mind, we might open up to questions.
Great, thank you so much for that.
If I can just invite the audience for questions, and if you can come up to the microphone and introduce yourselves, that'd be great. Questions? Gay, thank you.
Hello, Gay Robinson. When you talk about ICAP needing to be more embedded and better integration and so on, what sorts of mistakes do you think are being made or can be made when those things aren't working the way they could?
Sure. Thank you for the question. I think it's not so much in terms of mistake. It's more that you've got a tool, but it's not really being used. ICAP is sort of a framework, right? And it says you've got to do this, you've got to do that. Some of the organisations, right, when they do ICAP, they say, hey, I've got to tick a box. The standards say that I've got to run a stress test. Tick, I've run a stress test. The standards say I've got to do this. Tick, I've done that. Mm-hmm. And it's and sometimes you read the reports and they're really generic, bland statements that you can copy off a textbook. And the message is that that's not how it's supposed to be used, right? So if you think about it as being a compliance exercise, that if you put your mindset in there, say, APRA's told us to do these things, so we have to do it, then you're stuck in that mindset. Or the other side of the spectrum, we heard from someone at a plenary yesterday that, change your mindset and say, hey, this is a tool, you can actually use it and use it properly.
Yeah, you're also not making decisions with all the information that you have available. So you've got this ICAP process, which generates a lot of output. You put a lot of work into developing it. You should use that information to make the best possible decisions for the business.
Greg Taylor. A question about capital optimisation. If one looks at the published capital targets, they're usually something like 1.6 to 1.8 of MCR, and it's natural to wonder, is that optimal? I don't know. I don't know if anyone knows, but where capital optimization is being used, does it provide any evidence that you know of for or against that kind of level?
So I think capital optimization doesn't necessarily lead you to hold lower capital requirements in terms of the multiples, because those multiples, it's obviously a cushion to prevent you from breaching the PCR, and it's determined by the board's risk appetite, and it's modelled stochastically or however it's done. But I think it's more about optimizing your portfolio and other aspects such as reinsurance and investment so that your regulatory capital requirements are actually lower rather than
the relationship between your target capital and your PCR, if that makes sense. So it's understanding your business better, understanding what your high consumption areas are and whether you should invest more or less in those areas.
But it is a question of substance, isn't it? How much capital should you hold?
Yep.
And I mean, I understand that the amount of capital that a company holds will be conditioned by APRA requirements. They set trigger points and so forth, but perhaps those trigger points are misinformed as well. It seems to me that it's a real question, and I've never heard it addressed. I don't know any answers to that question.
Yeah. So you mean, for example, having a trigger at, say, 1.4 as opposed to 1.6?
Maybe.
What leads you to believe that 1.6 is a good
level to target? Well, if there's some prescribed trigger at 1.4, why? Is that a good thing, or could it be 1.3? I mean,
yeah.
These things, I don't know if they've been tested.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I guess that's it's a bit different. Capital optimization on one hand is, given that you've got this capital, how can you optimize it? And then you've got the other side, which is how much capital... What's your constraint? So your constraint doesn't have to be a regulatory constraint. It could be a rating agency constraint. And it's about how you... So your constraint should then lead to your risk appetite. And you have a quantitative measure saying, we don't want the probability of being rated a B to be more than or less than whatever, right? And then you set your target operating range. And then once you've got that, you say, right, how can I deploy the capital in the best way, optimize my portfolio, chunk it up using capital allocations so that everyone's got the same metrics, leading towards that.
Yeah.
And that will get rid of some of the... So some areas we see is that people have a target operating range, say 1.4 to 1.6, but they've actually got 1.8, and they're stuck on the capital for 0.2. They're just sitting there doing nothing, not being deployed. Well, they are being deployed. They're being deployed at government bonds or term deposits or whatever it is.
Any further questions?
In the meantime, I might ask one. You talked a lot about economic modelling and, the perception that it doesn't really add value. What do you think we can change so that people's perception of economic modelling and economic capital actually, becomes more positive?
I think for that to happen, insurers need to start using their economic capital models, which they may already have. So take the focus off it being an approved internal model for regulatory purposes, but just as a internal tool, and start uncovering more and more uses for it, developing it, making it more and more sophisticated, so you start seeing the value that can be added from it and use it in different parts of the business. And then it may lead you to a point where you realize you want to apply for internal model approval. But that shouldn't be the main goal, I think. So the perceived benefit should be taken off the regulatory capital aspect and more on how can you use this tool within your business.
Yeah, I think the perception here is that, the formula in Europe is very rigid and the benefit is more, there's a lot more benefit in Europe than there is in Australia, but it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. Unless you actually have an ECM and use it properly, you don't actually see the benefit. Mm, yeah. You don't actually see how rigid the standard formula can be until you've actually, done all that. And then you say, this is actually a good thing. But in the meantime, you've derived a lot of benefit out of using an ECM. So, in terms of capital allocation, in terms of stress testing, all of the things that we talked about.
Yeah. Time for a couple more questions. Any from the floor? I might add one more while we're waiting for the floor. Just, you talked about stress and scenario testing and the development of scenarios. Can you make some comments on what you've seen companies do when they present scenarios and actually workshop them, the results of them, and also comment on the trigger points and management actions and how you make those be real to a company?
Yeah, so It depends on what the board actually does. Now, some boards get the results of the stress tests presented to them, and they say, hey, this is good, and nothing actually happens. Some boards are involved in coming up with the stress tests, and that's the way to go because it's all about helping them to have a meaningful conversation. And then you can say, hey, you know, this is what the board wants. This is why I'm doing stress tests. And therefore, I'm going to build some realistic management actions in there rather than saying, hey, I'm just going to reduce dividends or say that, oh, I'm just going to raise some, you know, subordinate notes or whatever. You know, making it realistic and say, right, okay, I've got this scenario, 2 months in, this thing will happen, and so we'll respond with this management action and capital numbers become this, and then, you know, build it out in a realistic way. And that's how you get the benefit out of stress testing rather than just say, hey, I've ticked the box. I've got the Sydney earthquake. It's so fun.
Yeah, and you need to have the board involved from the beginning because otherwise you tend to have the situation where it's like you're studying for an exam and you're going through the memo of the test and you're just going, oh, yeah, I know that. But you want the board to be thinking, you know, from the outset what they want to test, what they see the key risks are to the business without being told, this is what we're going to do. Is it okay?
Great. Last question. Might take the last question too then. Just time for one more question. I asked the same question of Gay as well. What would you say some of the barriers are currently around ICAP embedment and the ICAP processes that companies find, and what would you change about that, the processes to make it a more kind of useful and valuable exercise for companies?
I think the first area is again, the integration between risk and capital. You really need to have those teams working together to fully appreciate all the aspects of the ICAP, and they should work together in producing the ICAP rather than just each team going off and doing their exercises. They really need to appreciate the use of the ICAP and the value of it as a tool within the business.
Yeah, I think it's a mindset thing. It's the same question I asked Gay the other day. How can you change the mindset to view it as a value-add thing rather than just say, I have to do this? You know, it's like having a car. You need your pink slip. You take it to your mechanic and say, your mechanic says to you that, hey, your brake is good. I've ticked the box. But who would use it as an opportunity to say, hey, I might need an upgrade here or there. I might change my windows or whatever, you know, to make my car actually work better. Yeah, I don't know how.
Thank you so much. That was very useful and insightful. Can I ask everyone to just join me in thanking Stephanie and Jack?